Blog Talk Radio.
How's it going, ladies and gentlemen? Yes, we have a special guest for you. He's a former WWE talent also. He also worked in WCW. This superstar is one half of the Young Stallions. Let's give it up for Jim Powers.
For that great introduction, I don't know that anybody else could reproduce that or replicate it, but thank you very much for that wonderful introduction. It's great to be on the show. Thank you for the invite.
Yes, no problem. It's an honor for you to be on here, Jim.
Thank you.
Yes. And were you ever a wrestling fan growing up in the New York area?
I grew up until I was about 9 years old. I was in Washington Heights, New York. I was raised by my aunt and uncle and my grandmother. And I'm going to say when I was a young kid, probably when the demographics of wrestling pertain to 6 to 10 years old, that's when I got involved in it on the television. I used to even watch it in Spanish. I don't know Spanish, but I loved wrestling so much. My uncle, who was like a father to me, he would take me to Madison Square Garden on occasion, and I would get to see the greats like Bruno Sammartino, obviously, Ivan Koloff, the Mongols. I mean, I'm going back quite a bit. I don't know if some of the your fans out there know these wrestlers, but it was just a fantastic time and a fantastic era. And, yes, I was very much interested in professional wrestling, as interested in professional wrestling as young boys are to Spider-Man, Superman, and, you know, all the superheroes that we used to read the comic books and all that stuff. And so professional wrestling was an extension. It was like, my God, these guys are superheroes. And I mean, here I am sitting, you know, right in front of them, and I get to watch them. And then as time went on, obviously, maybe to someone's eye, maybe a lot of people's eyes, I became the same figure.
Also, did you have a wrestling background before training?
I had a mediocre background at best. I wrestled. I had a judo background when I was younger, probably until my early to mid-teens. I had a judo background, and I had a 2 years worth of high school wrestling. Unfortunately, my best year would have been my senior year. But I discovered this thing called girls, and I got more interested in girls and hanging out and doing silly things and going down to the New Jersey Shore. And so wrestling, unfortunately for me, it is one of my biggest regrets that I quit the sport, and at that time I took the easy way out. And I regret that very much, and I still to this day speak to my high school wrestling coach, Bill Savage, about that.
And what are your thoughts of Big John Studd being training you for your big break?
Well, to be honest, John Studd was not an actual trainer. John and I never got in the ring, and he showed me how to do arm drags and leapfrogs and monkey flips and things like that, because that was not his style. So I was actually got involved with someone. I used to work at the security at the nightclubs in my area here in New Jersey, and someone had approached me, and I never like to give him credit, so I won't, because he really stuck it to me financially in the end. But anyway, I was working as a bouncer, for lack of a better term, at a nightclub, and I was approached by this gentleman, and he used to work for the WWWF way back when for Vince McMahon Sr., and he was training individuals, and we got together, and he had come to where I was working and asked me if I was interested in professional wrestling. And boy, the blood started flowing, and I started feeling good about it, because I remember when I was a kid how much I enjoyed watching it on television. So I said, sure I am. And we made a financial agreement, and I was on a minimal income at the time. I gave him the money he wanted half up front, and about 30 days later, it was time for me to do my balance due. And unfortunately, we were going to the small boxing gym in Jersey City, New Jersey, and he approached me and said that it's time for you to pay me the balance of my money. And I said, well, can you please do me a favor and cut me a break, and maybe we can make payments every week or something, because I just don't have the balance of the money. Well, this individual just took it. Well, he was kind of cold with me. He said, well, I'm sorry, we had an agreement, Jim, and that's the agreement. So tonight you have to sit outside of the ring while the rest of us, which would have been 8 individuals, train in the ring, and you have to sit, and, you know, unless you can get a ride home or whatever the case may be. So I said, well, you know, I stuck my tail between my legs, and that's what I did. And that just fired me up even more. So, you know how they say karma goes around? This particular individual that trained, that started to train me, he had come to a wrestling match in Hartford, Connecticut, and I had been very close with Warrior. I called him Ultimate Warrior Jimbo, I had called him. That's his real name. And this individual who had started to train me and get me on the road to professional wrestling shows up, and he's looking for a job with the WWF at the time. And he came over, and he sat up alongside of me and Ultimate Warrior and thought that I was going to help him out to get his foot back in the door with the WWF, and I did nothing of the sort. And that's what I mean about the karmic effect. He did me wrong, and wrong came back to him, because I would have helped him had he helped me. And that's the way I think about things in life.
What are your memories of your first debut match in the WWF?
Oh, my God. I think my first debut match, honestly, was with Nikolai Volkov. And Nikolai, Nikolai is not known to be one of the best workers in the business to begin with, because he's a big man. It's a different, it's a different style completely. It's a big man style. And so he tossed me around for about 5 minutes and then beat me on the sixth, or maybe it was 4 minutes and he beat me on the fifth. But regardless, you know, I got a lot of my, that was my first match. I'm 99.99% sure that it was with Nikolai Volkov. And that was my job. John Studd was instrumental in introducing me to the people in WWF. Let me go back to John just because he needs the credit. John and I met in a gym, workout gym, weightlifting gym here in New Jersey, where not too far where I live. And anyway, he says, "Wow," he says, "I understand you're into wrestling." He says, "Tomorrow we're going up to Poughkeepsie, New York. Oh, I have to go to Poughkeepsie, New York to do TV tapings. Would you like to come with me? And I'll introduce you to the booker," who was George Scott at the time. And I said, "Sure, oh my God, yeah," because all I had been doing was wrestling, like, you know, in a VFW hall or a small theater or a community center or things like that. It was independent wrestling. That's what I was doing. So I got a lot of my training on the job. But when John introduced me to the talent in the World Wrestling Federation, that's when I started to learn my craft. And I want to give kudos to John for that. Unfortunately, I forgot what your initial question was. My first match was with Nikolai Volkov, and he tossed me around. And I know I'm repeating myself. I have a habit of doing that. He tossed me around for a few minutes and then pinned me. That was my experience, but I knew not to take it to heart. I had an idea of the nature of the business. This is show business. Somebody's got to be the bad guy. Somebody's got to be the good guy. Somebody's got to win. Somebody's got to lose. But as long as the people, and at the time, the Poughkeepsie Mid-Hudson Civic Center held about 2,000 or 2,500 people, and it was sold out all the time. And the people enjoyed what they saw. So that's what the business was about. And I got that quick. And unfortunately, for me, as time went on, I was just happy to be a part of the wrestling business.
Yes. What are your thoughts on Vince McMahon Jr.?
My thoughts on Vince McMahon in general? Is that what you said, in general?
Yes.
He's a master manipulator. He's a, I gotta say, he's a, you know, you gotta give the devil their due. He's a tremendous businessman. He's a billionaire. He's taken the business from a local territorial or regional business to worldwide. It's the only company. Unless, of course, you go overseas and they have the smaller companies. But my thoughts on him as an individual, is that what you mean?
Yes.
Boy, it's like having a conversation with Vince McMahon or any type of meeting or any kind of interaction is like playing mental chess. And you've always got to be on. And I know business, they say business is ruthless, but he's taken it to a different level. He's beyond that. I don't know. I can't find a word to describe above ruthless, but it could be evil. You know, he's done, but the ways it's been done have a lot to be desired.
Yes, also, what are your memories of forming a tag team with Paul Roma as the Young Stallions?
I really didn't know Paul very well. I don't think, maybe I know him better now than I ever did because we're older and I bumped into him on occasion on some autograph signings and appearances. But my thoughts on him, I always try to babyface this and because I don't want to be a hard ass or beat up anybody. But he's an individual that came from a white-collar world. This is my opinion. He may disagree, but he came from a white-collar world where you wore a nice dress shirt, maybe you had a tie, you had a vest, you had slacks with creases in them and cuffs, and you had the nice shoes with the tassels. I came from a blue-collar world where I wore overalls and jeans and work boots and flannel shirts. So the way I've always worded this question was, it was just a personality conflict. It was two individuals that had come from two different worlds that clash. And that's what happened. That's my 57-year-old answer I'm giving you at 57 years old. Back years ago, I would have told you he's a fucking asshole. Okay, but I don't want to speak like that anymore. But as a child, you act like a child, you think like a child, you speak like a child. But now I'm 57 years old, and you got to look back on it and go, well, you know, it was just a matter of, again, personality conflict. Me coming from one world, growing up a certain way, him coming from another world, growing up a certain way. And it unfortunately, it didn't work because of that. They were going to do good things with us. They were going to put Mr. T was going to be our manager. And we were, because we stole the song from Jimmy Hart, the Crank It Up song, that was Jimmy Hart's song, and we stole it. That was our entrance music and all that. So there was going to be a lot to be done with us. But because of the fact that we couldn't get along, and the road agents saw that, they just turned that pencil upside down, and on the other end of the pencil is an eraser, and they just erased our names off there, and they gave it to Tito Santana and Rick Martel, I believe. Or was it Rick Martel and Tom Zink? I'm not sure, but it brought in another tag team. So, I mean, Paul and I, last time I saw him, we're cordial with each other. I have no animosity. Paul was more egotistical and pushy about the business, which I don't find it to be a bad thing. I think it's a good thing. I didn't have the confidence that Paul had to take that chance. That if I present myself as being egotistical, and I present myself as, you know, I want this, I want that, I want this, I want that, I was afraid I was going to lose my job. Paul was willing to take that chance, so kudos to him. And so I know he attached himself to, when they split us up, he attached himself to Paul, I think it was Paul Orndorff or Hercules, oh, I'm sorry, it was Hercules Hernandez first, and then he attached himself to Paul Orndorff when he went to WCW. Well, these guys were already on top. They were going around. They already had angles and worked with Hulk Hogan and made big money. So they didn't really need Paul Roma. Paul Roma needed them. But it's a good move on Paul's part. Was a good move on Paul's part. So that's my feelings on my relationship with Paul Roma and the Young Stallions. It could have been something wonderful had we both had the same mindsets.
Right. Definitely. And it was actually even y'all also had tag team matches with the Hart Foundation and Demolition also on Wrestling Challenge and Saturday Night Main Event. What are your thoughts on working with the Hart Foundation?
Hart Foundation was a very good team to work with, as well as Demolition was. The Hart Foundation were a little on the stiff side. You knew they were in the ring. They didn't want to hurt you, though, but that's just the way they worked. They worked so you knew they were there. They were at maybe 75% when they laid something in, whether it was a punch or a kick or this or that. You know, whereas Demolition, bigger tag team, Demolition was probably at 40-50% at most. They took care of you. They were big guys. You know, if they laid it in at 75%, you may get hurt. So, I mean, those, and especially with the Hart Foundation on Saturday Night Main Event, when they first started doing it on NBC Network, they did Saturday Night Live. I don't know. They preempted Saturday Night Live, which I thought was just out of this world, and they put on Saturday Night Main Event Live. So I think it was great for us to be on that show. I was on there a couple times. Once tag team with Paul Roma, and the other time as a singles match with Big Boss Man, God rest his soul, he's a wonderful human being. So, no, it was just great. And with Demolition, we went all over Europe. Paul and I wrestled with Demolition so much, and they were just the easiest, as big as they were the easiest tag team to work with as far as I'm concerned.
Right. And they definitely put you all over in their promos also, building up their your confrontation on either Superstars or any of the WWE shows.
Well, as far as the promos go, yeah, if you don't create your opponent, and you know you're more than likely you're going to be the one to win the match. If you don't create something, then what did you beat? So, I mean, they were good like that. Those guys could, I mean, there's things today, from what I see, are scripted, written out, word for word. Maybe there's a little ad lib in there once in a while, but it's word for word. Back then, Roddy Piper was never given a script, and I know Roddy personally. Don the Rock Morocco, the original Rock, was never given a script, and he did promos and interviews tremendously. I mean, and there's even Hulk Hogan. They were given a script, but today, from what I understand through the grapevine, and maybe you have better knowledge than I do about that, it's all scripted by writers, Hollywood writers, and some of the old-time wrestlers, some of the veteran wrestlers, which it seems to be working. I have no, you know, I watch it once in a while. I'll skim through it, but whatever they're doing today, it's working. It's become a public company. They reach out to a lot of charities. They're doing a lot of wonderful things with overseas, the military, Wounded Warriors. I mean, they're just so involved with world subjects that I just think it's great. It's a company that's grown to be. I never could imagine it. I never could imagine, and I wish I was a part of it now. But I don't miss the days I was there. I had a wonderful time. I experienced the world. I just, it was just so much fun. It really was, and I miss it to this day. And it's been, 98 was the last time I was in a ring, with WCW. So it's been this long, and I still miss it. But the lifestyle is a difficult lifestyle. It's a hard lifestyle, and it's gotten the best of a lot of us. Unfortunately, and I mean that in a bad way, it's taken so many lives. But no, I really do miss it. I was lucky not to have been caught up in the lifestyle of some of the people that we don't have with us anymore, and I miss them dearly, especially Jim Helwig, the Ultimate Warrior, my friend. I miss him dearly. I really do. And people will say, if they hear this, they'll say, Jim Powers, he didn't hang out with Ultimate Warrior. Well, yes, he did. And he hung out with Hulk Hogan, and he hung out with Rowdy Roddy Piper and The Undertaker and all of them, because I just seemed to click with certain people. It didn't matter what level they were at. I wasn't judged by that. I didn't, nor did I judge them by that. You know, nor was I, you know, gaga and say, oh, I'm so happy to be near The Undertaker and having a hot dog with The Undertaker in the middle of Nova Scotia while it's snowing. No, we just clicked. And they're all great guys, and the business now, it's just evolving and evolving and growing and growing. Sure, granted, for me, watching this, and sometimes I have a difficult time understanding how it got to where it's at, but you sit back and take a minute, you go, well, good for them. Good for them. Good for the company. I don't mean good for Vince McMahon as an individual. Good for the company. Good for the company. Good for the employees. Good for the wrestlers, that there's so many wrestlers now, as opposed that there used to be territories, regional territories, and they would bounce around the country, you know, for years on end, you know, go wherever they can make a dollar. But it's I'm happy. I'm happy for the WWE right now.
Also, you had a short stint at World Class Wrestling. What are your memories of World Class for a short while?
Okay, well, WCW, when I got there, in March of 96. I did the first show with them. It was in Baltimore, as a matter of fact, whatever their pay-per-view is. I did a match with them. Kevin Sullivan, being the booker and being a wrestler, knew what to look for, and apparently what he saw in me, he liked. So he called me back down. They were doing their tapings out of Orlando, and he called me down there to come for some TV tapings, and he treated me accordingly. He treated me very well, and I hate to say this because I spent more time with this company, the World Wrestling Federation, but the 2.5 years that I spent with WCW were better than any time I had in the World Wrestling Federation, because everyone was treated accordingly. I don't know, maybe it was because Kevin Sullivan liked me, because I like to go to the gym and muscular guy kind of guy and all that stuff, but whatever it was, I think he was fair with everybody, Kevin Sullivan. He was a tremendous booker. And then as that company, like WWF at the time, started to grow, the politics became more and more involved. So Kevin had lost his position. He treated me excellent. I commend him. I thank him. Great. Thank you, Kevin, if you listen to this. As the company started to grow, when Kevin Nash and Scott Hall got there and the whole NWO thing, it just became so political. It became like the WWF, you know, where you were afraid to walk around. You're like walking around on eggs all the time. So you were afraid whether you're going to have your job from one day to the next. And that's the way the WCW became, just like the WWF. And then it got awkward when Kevin Sullivan lost his position as the booker. My position changed, and then I got an injury. I had an injury August 31st, 1998, bad injury to my neck, and I saw the handwriting on the wall. I saw that the company, I felt that the company was going in a different direction that I didn't want to be with. So I kind of bowed out gracefully with my injury, and that was it. But the 2.5 years with WCW were considerably better than the 10 years I spent with the WWF.
What are your memories of Eric Bischoff?
I didn't have much interaction with Eric Bischoff. I had a little bit of interaction, but what really impressed me about him, or really made me feel good about him, was Kevin Sullivan and I were in a hallway in Orlando at some arena doing TV tapings. I don't remember exactly. Maybe it was on Disney property, but regardless. Anyway, I said to Kevin, I said, well, would you like, this is when I had just started. And Eric Bischoff was in the hallway, but he was about 30 feet from us or 20 feet from us. And Kevin and I were talking. I says, Kevin, I said, it was great to come down here. I appreciate the opportunity. And we spoke for a little while. And I said, would you like me to come back, for your next TV tapings 3 weeks from now or whatever it was? I think it was 3 weeks. And Eric Bischoff, before Kevin could answer, Eric Bischoff overheard me ask. And Eric said, you, Powers, right? I says, yeah. He says, you're back here. You're with us. And that was it. You know, he says, I want you back here. I want you back here next time for TV. And he said something else, and I don't know verbatim, that made me feel like I was part of that company. So my feelings and my memories about Eric Bischoff, and he's not dead, but I mean, it are all positive. Eric Bischoff and my interaction with him has been nothing but positive. It's been minimal, but sometimes that's enough. Less is better. So my interaction and my feelings about Eric Bischoff are nothing but positive, and Kevin Sullivan as well.
What are your thoughts of Teddy Long managing you? And Bobby Walker as a team?
I think Teddy is the most wonderful guy. He's the best. He really is. He's fantastic. I feel bad I haven't reached out to him. It's been a while. But anyway, it's a shame that he's gone from WWF. WWE, I'm sorry. But Teddy showed me a side of the business and taught me so much about the business in a short period of time than I had ever learned. And Teddy and I were maybe together, I want to say maybe if it was 2 years, maybe a year and a half. But the knowledge that he has about the business and the heart that this man has and the passion that he has for this business is amazing. He's a wonderful human being, and I wish him nothing but the best. I hope all is well with him. I'm sorry to hear that he got fired, but he was actually one of the best things that happened to me in the wrestling business. He's one of the taught me so much in such a short period of time. I could never repay him for that, but he really did. He knows this business in and out. And I was very sorry to hear that the WWE let him go. Wonderful human being. Great manager. He does manage you. He's not just a working manager. He does manage you. He pulls you aside. He gets in your ear. He'll snag you by the collar if he has to, but he does manage you. He's a good, great human being. And I hope he's listening, and I wish him nothing but the best.
Yes, did you have a a friendship with the Von Erichs also, with Kevin and Curry?
My relationship with the Von Erichs was minimal. I was in WCCW for a little bit, for maybe about a month or so, 45 days at most. But the only memory that I have of the Von Erichs, it was that was so political that, it was just so obvious, and it was just so pathetic that how political it was that the boys were going to be on top, and that was it. But unfortunately, for the younger Von Erichs, the father ruled with an iron fist. He really did, and he pushed those kids to a place that they never should have been. Now, I'm not talking about Kerry, because Kerry was a tremendous athlete. I'm not talking about Kevin. Kevin was a tremendous athlete. David, I never got to meet. But the younger ones and the smaller ones never should have been pushed to that degree. But my this is one, another regret was I had gone down, WCCW contacted me. I don't even know how they got my information. It's been many, many years. And wanted me to come down and do a show at the Tarrant County Convention Center, which is their big 4th of July show, I think, or either, I believe it's 4th of July or Labor Day, they have a big show there. And so I went down there and I worked, I went down there, they flew me down, they took good care of me, put me up in a hotel, everything nice and sweet and beautiful, you know. So, I worked a match and the place was sold out. It was like what I had experienced here in WWF. You know, when you go to WWF arenas, they're sold out all the time. So when I went down to this WCCW, the place was sold out. I was the first match. I had a babyface match with a guy named, I don't know if he's still with us. I hope he is. Brian Adias. And we did something during the course of the match where it made it look like I was injured and the match could not continue. So I didn't get hurt business-wise. And it was a good match. But I had gotten a taste of what the money was like in the WWF. And when I did this match in Dallas for them, the money was comparable. So I said, wow, I said, they're gonna let me have matches like that, or maybe win or do something with me. I'll go back down to Dallas and work down there. But unfortunately, I didn't realize that was like their WrestleMania. The rest of a lot of the other shows were like in rodeos, barns, things that a kid from Washington Heights, New York, would never have experienced. So, and I do contradict myself because I say I was never about the money when it came to wrestling, but in this instance, I was, and I regret that. I regret ever saying that. So I came back after a month or so of being down there and realizing that it was just not economically feasible for me to stay there. I turned tail and came back to New Jersey and started working for the WWF again. But the Von Erich situation, the kids were a little wild. I mean, Kerry, Kevin, I don't know the rest of them, but the parents pretty much created monsters out of these kids by enabling them so much to have whatever they want, and then some. I mean, that's my opinion, but it was a learning situation for me. It was I learned something from that. I learned a little bit more about the wrestling business. And for that, I appreciate them, and I appreciate World Class Championship Wrestling.
Also, you worked with Ken Patera. What was your memories of Ken Patera?
I got my ass kicked. Ken and I had done a tag team match. It was me and somebody else, Salvatore Belomo, maybe. We had a tag team match that had not aired on TV yet. It was me and I believe Salvatore Belomo against Ken Patera and Big John Studd. Well, they, needless to say, they beat the hell out of us and pinned us. So it wasn't maybe a week later or 2 weeks later, George Scott had called me because he knew that I lived in the area here in New Jersey by the Izod Center. Back then it was named something else, I don't even remember. He says, Jim, we got an opening if you want to have a match tonight. I said, oh my God, I could spit and hit the arena from where I live. So I said, sure, absolutely. So I went down there and in front of 19,000 people, they told us we have to go 11 minutes. So Kenny Patera says, wait a minute. He says, we just had a match on TV, and we beat these guys up. We beat him and his partner up in a few minutes. So how am I going to go 11 minutes with him? So George Scott says, I'm sorry, George Scott says, just do it. So he beat me up for about 10 minutes. He let me punch him in the stomach for about 30 seconds, and then he put me in his I don't even know what it's called. It's a hammer lock or something he put me in, and then I submitted, or whatever. He won the match. So it was just that was my experience. But you know, there was a little plus to that. This little sidebar to that, that my high school wrestling coach, he had never coached before for any team. And I had just joined the team that year. I won what they call a novice tournament championship. And he called the our local newspaper in the area and put a little paragraph about me, and that I was his first champion to become a professional wrestler, to become a professional athlete. So that was very nice. So getting beat up and losing to Ken Patera didn't hurt so much.
Right. Also, you definitely had good matches with Brooklyn Brawler, Sting Lombardi, and Barry Hull. What was the memories of as a tag team working with both of them?
As a tag team or as singles, either way you look at it, Steve and I, Brooklyn Brawler, Steve Lombardi, whatever, and Barry Horowitz. I mean, Paul and I wrestled with these guys either singles or tag team matches. I mean, it was, as the expression goes, I don't know if the kids use it anymore, it was a night off. It was easy. We didn't even have to see each other. We didn't have to speak to each other. There wasn't a word that had to be said between us. We went in the ring. We did what we do. We got out of the ring. That was it. It was easy. It was pleasant. It was a night off.
Yeah, definitely. Also, you also had worked at the Conquistadors. Definitely, that was also
same thing. Ditto right there. Conquistadors. That Jose Luis Rivera and Jose Estrada. Those guys were great, and the Shadows as well. They put us with those tag teams, but then they put us with the big tag teams too. They put us with the Hart Foundation. They put us with Demolition. They put us with the Islanders. I mean, we didn't just wrestle the underneath tag teams. We wrestled other tag teams as well, and we did well. If history serves me correctly, and I don't think my head's been hit that much, we won the first Survivor Series. We shared that win with the Killer Bees. So I think the Young Stallions was a good tag team, and a tag team with a lot of potential, but for the reasons I mentioned to you earlier, it just didn't work out. But no, all the tag teams, all the ones I mentioned, were very easy. Everyone was easy to work with. There was nothing that you had to go over. You didn't have to pick it apart with a tweezer. It was just an easy. It was again a night off. The Conquistadors, the Shadows, Horowitz, the Brawler, Demolition. Everyone was, it got to be, you know, when you do something 300 nights a year, it gets to be kind of easy after a while. You know, you don't really have to put much thought into it unless there's something, you know, extra that you want to do or something that you want to try for your own personal reasons, then you say, listen, I want to try this just to see if I can do it. You ask the other person that you're going to do it on or do it with that, and then you know, you're working on your own skills, which is commendable as well.
What are your memories of you working the first Survivor Series tag team elimination?
Well, I think I just did a little spot on Rolling Stone magazine about that, but we went into the building. I was by myself, and Paul and I we went, you know, the lineup and the outcomes were just on a chalkboard, a green chalkboard with obviously chalk. So Paul and I had walked in, and we saw the way the lineup was on the chalkboard and who was going out where and this and that, you know, this team's going out, that team's going out, this is who's going to be left. And it just kind of laid it out for you. Whoever the road agent was did it. And in a pay-per-view, it was probably Pat Patterson. So anyway, Paul and I looked at the chalkboard, and I go, I think we both looked at each other kind of cockeyed and confused and said, well, this doesn't look right. Should this chalkboard be turned upside down? Is it the other way around or what? So it was as simple as that for me. You know, that when you walked into the building, you went in the dress room, you dropped your stuff, you walked over to see when you were on, whether first, second, third, whatever, 10th, 11th, you saw what was going to happen. You knew by the check mark who was going to win or who was going over and who was, you know, doing a job. You kind of knew. But no, we didn't expect that at all. I think in this case here, you know, I very rarely like to, but I can speak for Paul saying that we didn't expect to share that victory with the Killer Bees or anybody for that matter. We didn't expect that spot at the Survivor Series, but it was great that they gave it to us. And we got to be in the Survivor Series again the following year and won WrestleMania in a Battle Royal. So, I mean, it was good. It was good. I look at it differently now than I did before. Then again, I'm older. With age does come wisdom, whether you like it or not. But, no, the Survivor Series was... that would have been the springboard for our careers, Paul and I, had we were able to get along. But unfortunately, it didn't work out that way. But I'm glad that we won the Survivor Series and shared the victory with the Killer Bees.
Also, you had your first WrestleMania at WrestleMania 4 for the Battle Royal. What was that participating at WrestleMania 4?
What was it like to be a part of WrestleMania? Oh, God.
Yeah.
You know, it's overwhelming. It's very hard to find the... adverbs or the words to describe that. I don't know if adverb is the right word, but I mean, it's very hard to it's just, you know, you've made it. You're a part of something. You've been given the opportunity to be a part of the biggest event in professional wrestling. I mean, it felt like a pat on the back, a big pat on the back and a hug from the company. I don't want to name individuals like Vince McMahon or something like the what they say now, the WWE universe. You know, it felt like the WWE Universe gave me one big hug and said, you deserve to be in this battle royal.
And that was definitely at Trump Plaza. How was that experience being working that building right there?
Not really, not much. The only building that ever makes a difference is Madison Square Garden. Any other building is just a venue. It didn't
right.
matter. Like I said, I worked in rodeos, WCCW, but any other building it's just a venue. Madison Square Garden, because it has the history it has. Working at Trump Plaza, really, no. As far as working in the venue, the building itself, no, not really. Nothing too grandois about it.
Yes, any memories of or thoughts on Pat Patterson?
it is what it is. I think it's all out now that Pat's gay and all that. But unfortunately, it should have come out considerably sooner when it was going on. It was some of the young talent was being taken advantage of. Some of the ring crew, if not all, being taken in. Whatever was available at that time, back in my era, was being taken advantage of. And Pat, his sexual preferences being what they are, was a part of that, probably a big part of that, if not the mastermind, because there was other people underneath him who had the same sexual preferences. So, Pat never really did anything wrong to me, because I never let it get that far. I know how to put a period at the end of a sentence before the sentence is over. So, it never got that far. So, what was done with other individuals, as far as I know, it's just hearsay. But if you hear hearsay from enough people, enough times, there may be something to it.
Right. Do you have any stories of Andre the Giant also?
He is great. Andre was just, I had the pleasure of being in the ring with him once with Tito Santana, and thank God him and Tito used to like to play cards, or he could have killed us. Andre is, every time you saw him, he had a gallon of wine wrapped around his thumb, or if his thumb could fit through that hole where the gallon goes. But anyway, and he had a big glass of ice, like a Starbucks big coffee cup of glass of ice, and he would pour his red wine in there, and I think it was whatever color, it didn't matter. If it was pink, he would have drank it. But he was just drinking that red wine, and then at night you'd see him after the matches, you'd see him at the bar. He liked his drink, and he had a wonderful assistant with him, Tim White. Tim White owned a bar up in Boston. I don't know where Timmy is. I haven't seen him in many years or heard of him. But Tim White, they had an assistant for him, and he would watch him and take care of him. But Andre lived his life the way he was going to live his life, and that was it. So kudos to him. Pats on the back to him. He had the opportunity. From what I understand, it's hearsay, he had this disease called acromegaly, which makes everything grow in your body. Well, there's a way to reverse that. Andre chose not to have the procedure done. What I was told, what I heard a few times. So he was just going to live his life the way he was going to live his life, and that was it. But he enjoyed life. He looked, from what I saw from Andre, and I saw a lot of Andre, he enjoyed life. He didn't care if it's 10 o'clock in the morning or 9 o'clock in the morning, he wants a glass of wine, he's going to have a glass of wine. If he wants to eat before a match, he's going to eat before. He's going to do whatever he wants. Vince McMahon Jr., Vince McMahon now, the guy who's, Vince McMahon, not his father, Vince McMahon, you always called him boss. Boss. So what does that tell you, the respect that man has?
Yep. There was always a thing that job. He wasn't that going to lay down for Hogan if it was up to him.
That's right. And I think Hogan. I don't know the story. I wasn't there. I'm not Hulk Hogan nor am I Andre the Giant. Thank God, because he's 6 feet under, and God rest his soul. He's a wonderful man, from what I've seen. That's how I judge people. Andre could have done whatever he wanted to do. But I don't think Vince McMahon knew. I know, God rest his soul, Joey Morella. Now, this is something I don't think I've ever told anybody. Joey Morella, who was a referee, who was also Gorilla Monsoon's son, and may they both rest in peace, Joey Morella was offered $5,000 from somebody. This is what he told me, just to give out the finish, to tell them what the finish was, whether Andre was going over or whether Hogan was going over. So Joey said no.
Wow.
Yep. That's the first time I've ever told anybody that. How we doing on time here?
Definitely. Were there any ideas of you and Tito Santana possibly having a long tenure as a tag team?
Was there? Not these days, no. But you know what? That would have been great for me. That would have been a lesson. I mean, we don't live too far from each other, actually. So Tito and I got along tremendously. I have nothing but great things to say about him. I know he teaches school, he teaches Spanish and a little phys ed and something. He lives in a town about 30 miles from me. And every once in a while I'll bump into him. He's still doing independent shows. But having Tito as a tag team partner would be along the lines of the opportunity that Paul looked for and got, was having Hercules Hernandez and Paul Orndorff as a tag team partner, because you want to attach yourself to somebody who's had more experience and maybe even better talent than you, because they'll raise the bar for you. If you don't have nobody to raise the bar for you, you don't know where to go. So if I were in a tag team, if Tito and I became tag team partners or were tag team partners, obviously we're not going to become tag team partners, but if we were tag team partners, that would have been nothing but a benefit to me. And God, I would have cherished it.
Also, what are your memories of working in ECW for a short stint?
I worked there. I think it was one night, maybe 1 week, one night. I worked with Shane Douglas. We had a great match. I'd love, if anybody out there listening, if they have a match of me and Shane Douglas together from ECW, please send it to me or send it here. Send it to the radio station. I'd love to have that match because I thought it was a great match. I had one match with him, but the first match was with a guy named Ray Odyssey. And then they put me over. I beat him. And then the next match was built up for TV, me and Shane. And Shane is fantastic on the microphone. He is great. So between the little bit of wrestling we did in the ring and most of him on the microphone, I think the match was fantastic, which is why I'd love to get a copy of it. Wayne, if you know how to get that copy to me, I'll pay you for it. I thought it was that good.
Yeah, definitely. I'll definitely try to search around, even at the ones like Rob Feinstein also, definitely.
Oh, well, I did, I don't know if you saw my video, I did a shoot video with him. Maybe if he's nice, he'll send you a copy of it.
Right.
If not, when we get off this phone, you can send me your address and I will.
Okay. What are your memories of AWF for a short while?
It was good. It was too easy. The promoters were marks. So the expression goes, a mark and his money will soon part. Well, they lost $3 million. I'll give you a little example. I mean, it was Tito Santana and Sergeant Slaughter ran it for them. So So they did well, I'm sure. And if Tito hears this, he knows to giggle. But it was just easy. They sent us all, and they treated us first class. But they ran out of money, and they didn't have events. They would bring in extras for TV tapings. The one thing that I saw that I knew that this company wasn't going anywhere was when we were at, it's called the NAPI convention, where programs are trying to sell themselves to TV stations. Well, AWF was trying to get a TV station, was trying to get their show on the air. Well, Vince McMahon is around the corner, and of course he's got himself on the air. He's just looking for more channels or stations. Paul Alperstein, God rest his soul, wonderful man, wanted to go over and take a picture with Vince McMahon. Well, I said, that's me and Tom Brandy were tag team partners at the time. And Tom and I looked at each other and we go, well, there goes the company, because he was the mark for wrestling and Vince McMahon, and he wanted to be that, but he couldn't. From what I understand, and Tom would know better than I would, he had a minimal budget. And with a minimal budget, you can only do minimal things. And so it didn't take long before they collapsed.
Mm-hmm. Also, you also had a chance to work with Disco Inferno, and you went over in that one on WCW main event. Also, that was one of your other highlights.
To be honest with you, I don't remember it. But if it was because Kevin saw, Kevin Sullivan the Booker saw somebody who may be a bigger guy, a muscular guy, or this or that, and he saw a guy doing disco in the ring, so it didn't, psychologically it doesn't work. You know, if you have a big muscle guy, and I'm not tall, so let's put it that way. If you have a muscular guy who was in shape, was athletic looking.
Hello? Yeah, so I think we lost Jim. Let's see if we can get him back on. Jim, are you there?
Okay. We were talking about disco, and it's always nice to get your hand raised and be the winner and stuff like that, but keep in the back of your mind that it is a business, it's an entertainment business, and it doesn't matter who wins or loses. But, Kevin Sullivan, again, I have to say that he's a good booker, because he's not going to put, he was a good booker, I don't know what he's doing these days, he's not going to put a 7-foot, like the Big Show, in against Rey Mysterio, and then have Rey Mysterio win the world championships. It doesn't make sense. There's no psychology behind that. You know, and I hate to bring up Rey's name, because I understand there was a tragedy a few days ago.
Yes, definitely a tragedy, and definitely praying for both the Rey Mysterio and the Gual family also.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. I mean, this has not happened in professional wrestling in many years, where in the ring accident other than. The last one I can think of was Owen Hart, who is a dear, dear friend of mine and a wonderful human being. But I can't even watch that stuff on YouTube or on the internet. It just turns my stomach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was definitely that. Even with these marks was like posted on Twitter, and they even got even ones that came that's also in the business today also had stopped them and warned them that if they post another one, it's going to be blocked.
Wow, that's a terrible thing. It really is. Because I know Ray personally, and I know he did not mean to do anything like that. But man, I hope the authorities see it that way too. Wayne, I hate to be a killjoy here, but I've got something to get to. So how much time? Much more time would you like?
I would say a couple more minutes.
Okay, let's do a wrap up.
You also doing your last ending match was like 4 or 5 years ago. Working with the Spirit Squad of Kenny and Mickey.
Or Mikey. I did a show not too far from my home. I think it was 2009. I worked. My partner was Danny Giamondo, and we had some. I don't know what the local promoter tag team title. Dennis Coraluzzo was a local promoter many years ago, so they ran a benefit type of match thing for him. And so I was fortunate enough to wrestle with Danny Giamondo years ago. He was called the Inferno Kid, but we all were called something years ago, against the Spirit Squad, and we won the tag team championships, and if somebody could find that belt for me right now, I'd give him $1,000, but I don't know where it is. But that's the nature of the business.
Right. And do you have anything to plug for the listeners out here and the fans?
I'm not one to plug. You know, I get a lot of stuff that comes to my house. I get self-addressed stamped envelopes from Germany and, you know, different parts of the world, and, you know, of course, North America for pictures and things like that. I just want people to know that my address, and they know my legal name. That's not hard to find out with Wikipedia. If they want anything, just please, I don't want any money for anything. Just a self-addressed stamped envelope, so they know. And for the fans that are listening right now, I have a stack of letters and requests on my desk, and I will get to them as soon as possible. Sometimes I move a little bit slower than a snail, but I'm going to see what I can do to pick up the pace. So I do have your things, whoever sent things out to me, and I will get to them, I promise. And for the ones that are looking for pictures or a DVD, I have a limited amount of DVDs left, shoot DVDs. Just send me a self-addressed stamped envelope. And as far as the DVD goes, maybe just a $10 that I will $10 for the DVD, and I will promise to donate that to the ASPCA. Organization, I'm sure you know that. You don't know that I'm passionate about it, but I become passionate about it because I have two dogs and I love them dearly. And when I watch those ASPCA commercials, they make me cry. They really do. But so, send me your stuff. Send me a self-addressed stamped envelope. If it's just a picture, no problem. I don't care about that. If it's a DVD, send me $10 that I will donate to ASPCA. And as far as online goes, it's MR, like Mr. Jim Powers, at AOL.com. So feel free to contact me. I don't get to the computer as often as I should or have in the past, so bear with me if I'm a little tardy, okay? But it's MR, JimPowers. At AOL.com, and if you have a request or something, if you want a picture or a DVD and whatever it may be, an autograph, and I'll get back to you as soon as possible. And it's just been great being on the air here and being able to air the way I feel about something I did for the greater part of 15 years. And I'm glad that people still care to send me a letter with a self-addressed stamp envelope, just a sign, a piece of paper. Thank you for caring. Thank you for being there. And I promise, I know I'm tardy, but I will get it back to you. Thank you very much. I love you all.
All right, Jim, you have a good night, and you can come back to the show anytime to Wrestling It Factor.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. I greatly appreciate it, and please stay in touch with me.
All right. Surely will.
Very good, Wayne.
All right.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Jim Powers. If you want to look for this archive or any other archives for Wrestling It Factor Radio podcast, hit me up at Wrestling It Factor group page show at Wrestling It Factor Radio show, or the page, fan page at Wrestling It Factor Radio Show, or blogtalkradio.com with this archive or any other. This is Wayne Benitez signing off. Later.